Don't you just love headlines like this? Criminal arrested for the 99th time. And this is the kind of thing that drives everybody crazy. If I may encourage you all, if you're a researcher, please remember that every policymaker, every individual, every institution operates in a context. And because in a former life I was a chemist, I worked in a chemical factory, I was an instructor, I understand the specificity and sometimes narrowness of what we do as researchers. However, when you get to policymakers, they operate in a much broader context. If you're a policymaker, please understand, in the 21st century, what we're learning in Michigan is we need to govern by collaborative. You have to govern within networks. You can't just impose them on high. And if you're a practitioner, we're learning that you have to stay focused because things will come along, they will upset the apple cart, and the best laid plans of mice and men are just that. So what we had in Michigan between 1992 and 2002, in that 10-year frame, we completely restructured felony sentencing in Michigan, everything completely redone. We completely overhauled our approach to controlled substances. We implemented truth in sentencing. We had a significant restructuring of the courts, how they did everything. We had drunk driving reform. We had a governor who eliminated a lot of our public defense work. We had our Detroit crime lab, 1/4 of all the evidence in the state. They had compromised procedures. The entire lab closed and flooded the entire system. School programs are being cut. The safety net was being shredded in places. And crime victim rights were out there with a fairly strong voice in Michigan. So in the middle of all this, here's what we're being told by Michigan opinion leaders. The complaint, well, guess what? We put too many people in prison, and we need to have more people diverted. And they compared us to surrounding states. What a surprise. Too few prisoners are being paroled. They serve longer than they need to for public safety. So the solution, we were told, divert more people, parole more people from prison, we'll save tens of millions of bucks. If we close prison, we'll save tens of millions of dollars. If we reduce the number of employees, we'll save tens of millions of dollars. That's what we were told. Here's what drove it. Take a guess. Right about there, we had a sex offender with 3 prior sex offense convictions and 3 prior prison sentences who walked and he committed a heinous crime in a large area, Metro Detroit area. And as a result, the public went berserk, policymakers went berserk, prison population spiked up, maxed out our capacity. There was a move to try and mitigate that. It didn't work. It bounced back up. And during that 3-year little hiatus right here, there was an agreement we're going to build more prisons. Those prisons started coming online right here, and they jumped up over 50,000, over 51,000 in 2002. We have term limits in Michigan. And in 2002, everybody got broomed. All the legislators got broomed. The administration, they all got broomed. Everybody is brand new. So after these 10 years of all these reforms, all the stakeholders have kind of got their hands on their thighs, pulling their shorts, we're all kind of huffing and puffing. And all these new people come in and say, okay, time to do reform. So we had all these competing pressures out there, and we all understood people going to prison, we spend too much. This is what really drove people bonkers. The prison budget had gone from about $3.25 billion to over $2 billion during a time frame. Now I'm going ahead into the future to take you where we are. Curiously, while the prison population was going up, the percentage of felons who were adjudicated and being sent to prison was dropping. It was at a high of 40% in the late 70s. By 1990, 1 in 3 felons went to prison. Today in Michigan, about 19% go to prison. What this led to is local stakeholders, key groups saying, this isn't working. They would point to our violent crime in Michigan. Violent crime would go up and down maybe 10% over the last decade, but the number of arrests has dropped by 40%. The closure rate for murders in Detroit was down around 30%, and we had the community screaming bloody murder. Then they looked at the number of felons. Curiously, we were actually adjudicating more felons over that same decade. The number of felons adjudicated went up by over 40%, but the number of felons going to prison remained flat, and that's why the percentage dropped down. That was a very conscious effort to divert felons, and the question is, did we accomplish public safety? Did we take offenders to keep them from reoffending? We had a very robust program called the Michigan Prisoner Reentry Initiative. If you have any interest in reentry issues and looking at something that's relatively mature, go to Michigan.gov, go to Michigan Department of Corrections, pull up MPRI. The program they have down is a fantastic problem. It is a seamless plan of services and supervision. They're theoretically working with individual offenders. They work with the locals theoretically, and they start at prison and they go on. Their goals, promote public safety, increase success of offenders, do risk management, accountability for both offenders and system officials, and get victim participation. Now, as we went through this, and we're implementing MPRI, What we found is that one of the strengths is we standardize risk assessment across the state. If you don't know what works, how do you know what to fund? And if people say something works here and people are there say we don't believe it, if you have standardized risk assessment, it works. We're working with the Supreme Court in Michigan to get this in all the courts. It makes a big difference. We predicated what we were doing on evidence-based practices. If you don't have employment, you have a problem. If you don't have housing, we worked on mental health issues, substance abuse issues, education issues, transportation. The MPRI, what we're doing in Michigan, is putting our funds specifically in these areas because the research says this makes a difference. When we talk to local stakeholders, they say it makes a difference. The weakness, this thing was budget-driven. All the people who are running this cared about, it seemed like, was, are we spending less money all in all on the budget? And then they had implementation issues. What works in Detroit doesn't work in Kalamazoo, doesn't work in Traverse City. Kind of looks like this. This is my drive home. I took this Saturday. And you can't see it clearly, but in a quarter-mile stretch, a speed limit goes from 70 to 60, back up to 70, down to 45, and back to 70 over a quarter mile. Now, whoever is doing the construction for the department here, it makes sense to them. The problem is, in real life, guess what we all do when we drive through that zone? We're all doing 70. We found that if I'm sick, I go to a doctor, I get a prescription, I go to the pharmacy, I get my meds, I go home. If you're in the state correctional system and you need a pharmaceutical, it's a 54-step process. And every step got added in by somebody doing it. It all made sense. You know what? We can do better than this. So the stakeholders came up with a blueprint for Safer Michigan. If you go to the Prosecuting Attorneys Association of Michigan website, the PAM website, you pull up their blueprint for Safer Michigan. They have a far more detailed presentation on this. What they said is, you know, we need to get down to business and start influencing policymakers. So we had the administration aggressively pushing for reforms. We had the stakeholders saying these don't work, let's do something different. So what this blueprint group said is we need to have adequate police. In Detroit, and I can tell you from personal experience, if something happens to you, you have to get down and file a police report. They will not come out and see you. Your home gets broken into, they will not come out and see you, generally. Now, if there's an armed robbery and somebody's injured, you got somebody bleeding out, you know what, they'll show up. But it's hard to get a response. They want adequate prosecution resource. They also want adequate representation for criminal defendants. And they want adequate courtroom resources. A judge is not going to have programming as part of the conditions of a sentence if it's not available. For corrections, we want adequate local resources. We need jail space. Probation and parole, which is run by the state, but the state seems to default to oversight as opposed to really offering resources, which are offered by the locals anyway. And then we need to make sure we don't do too much with our reducing prison population. So through 2002, this is our prison population. Between a robust reentry program, between stakeholders all sitting down agreeing to work with us, we were able to do this. We basically stabilized the population. People are still saying you spend too much. And here's what drove everybody crazy. Slope compares to slope. Starting at the top left-hand corner, this is the budget compared to the number of employees. The fewer employees, the more the budget went up. The next one to the right is the number of prisoners versus the population. Now, that last little drop in the prisoner population is a projection. We don't think they're going to be able to actually meet that. But even so, the budget's going up. Right below that, we have closed, last year we closed 11 prison facilities, major. We released a lot of parolees, and the costs still go up. And what we found is at the bottom left-hand corner, the red is the savings we have gotten from closing prison facilities, and the blue is the economic increases, even though we have fewer employees. And so reentry was what was driving the closing of prisons, but it really was masking other drivers out there. So if you get into reentry, please understand you have a lot of agendas going on out there. We learned a lot like New Hampshire. Thank you, BJS. According to them, the national average for supervised offenders going back to prison is 33% to 36%. In Michigan, we're around the 60% level. Our reentry, while robust, was not particularly effective. It's driving our prison population. So here's a policy debate in Michigan. We stopped the growth in prison population. Too many criminals back on the streets. Crime is going down. Crime isn't increasing. We have four of the most violent cities in America, and Detroit's one of the 10 most dangerous in the world. So what do? You call on the experts at Justice Center, counsel state governments. That's what we did. They came in, did analysis. We love this. For the first time, they got past all the individual biases, institutional memory. They went across all the departmental lines, all the databases. They looked at everything. They gave us analysis. Everybody's cheering and saying, oh, yeah, look, see, I told you. Look at that, look at that. Yeah, well, look at this. We told you. So everybody was right, but nobody had a global picture. CSG gave that to us. Then they gave us policy options. When this was presented, and Marshall probably well remembers this, when they came up with final savings that we could get aggregated, those people who are budget-driven said, it's not enough money, and they wanted to walk away from the table. And the locals leave the room, and they're all cheering and high-fiving, because guess what? They're recognizing that we can do things in the community. It doesn't have to just be parolees. It can be about probationers, and it can be about crime prevention also. So here's what CSG did. Pulled together over 80 stakeholder groups. I'm sitting in this room with all these people, and I know almost all of them. Never had them all together before. And everybody's kind of looking, look, it's them. Oh, look, it's them. And the level of interest, caution, mistrust, it was an interesting blend in that room. CSG analyzed data across all department databases. They gave us an overview of what was happening all across the state. They gave us a three-tier prevent crime, better interventions earlier on before they rise to the threshold of going to prison, and they gave us once you're in prison, what can we do to help reduce reoffending and therefore costs, theoretically. So they identified the pressures we had, all those people going through all the reforms. They looked at the programs we had, the MPRI that was in place, other issues. We have therapeutic courts out there. We're acting independently. Everybody agreed to be factually driven. I'm trying to give you graphs because we don't go by opinion. We go by the facts. We agreed to a comprehensive approach. Everybody is part of this, all the key stakeholders, and we agreed to implement a balance of deliverables. Everybody gets something. Nobody gets everything, but everybody gets something. Let me back up. Here's part of our problem. We have the Detroit Free Press, and they are always on our case about we spend too much on corrections and we can do things better. And last Wednesday, we get this wonderful addition, and the Senate Majority Leader came over and dropped this on my desk. And here's a guy. He was a serial killer. He got out. He killed again. So here's a paper saying, stop sending people to prison, and what do we get top of the fold? And oh, guess what? Here's Kwame Kilpatrick, mayor of Detroit. He didn't pay his restitution. He was hiding assets. So he got sentenced to prison. You shouldn't go to prison for this, but he did. Now they want to send him to boot camp, and the whole city of Detroit is all upset that Kwame Kilpatrick is not going to spend enough time in prison. So how do you determine if your reentry is successful? Because he was out on probation. He was in Texas, wasn't paying his restitution. We put down an agreement for what success is. We put this into the budget law, first of all, so the budget-driven people had this. And then we're working now on putting it into the policy so it goes beyond. Because at the end of 2010, term limits, we're all getting broomed again, entire legislature gone. Executive branch, everybody's gone. We start over again. All the stakeholders are kind of groaning. What do we do? So we said this. Report to your field agent. Absconders were not considered failure. And all the department used to report was failure. So they must be successes. We don't believe that. We looked at evidence-based practices, substance abuse issues, mental health, sex offender. You can see these. We looked at just like the unemployment system. Are you working? Are you getting training to get a job? Are you genuinely and actively investigating employment opportunities? Do you have housing? Sex offenders. We have exclusionary zones for residents for sex offenders. And you do the circle graphs on your city, what you find is you have these weird little areas where sex offenders can live. And you go back to Detroit, you go back to Kalamazoo or Pontiac or Flint, and you look at where they can live, we have a problem. Then we have transportation problems. You may have gang issues that play into it. So we're finding that we've had to put more money into housing than we anticipated doing. But if you don't have a place to live, I'm telling you, it's just trouble waiting for you. Getting a state identification card. It is so frustrating that what's one thing a guy has behind bars? He's got time on his hands. Start getting the documents you need so that when you walk out the door, you get down to Secretary of State, who has Homeland Security issues. You can say, here's my A documents, my B documents, my C documents. I can get a state ID card. Not going back to prison, not going back to jail. We have defined success. What have we done? We have a first responder program. We sat down with another collaborative, mental health professionals, providers, law enforcement, and the community of persons with mental illness. We put together a 200-page manual. If you want to see what we put together, you can email me. I don't know where this is on the web, but I will get you a website reference to it. We have trained across the state on this. We do it regularly. I have heard outstanding comments from people on the field that you go to a crime scene and somebody presents with a mental illness, doesn't matter why. Significant difference. We have found that the jail commitment, just being arrested, has dropped dramatically in the counties where we're doing this aggressively. We're expanding therapeutic justice, drug courts, sobriety courts, mental health courts. funding is tough. If you tell people it makes a difference and you've got local buy-in, this will work. We've enhanced resources for both pretrial and adjudicated offenders. This gets the locals happy. You can also, by doing pretrial, you can start before you actually get to it. If you know the guy's a substance abuse problem, get on it right now. State Department of Corrections, this is what we do for MPRI. My clock is running out here. So here's what we had for a prisoner population. It had grown. We'd stabilized it. Council state governments came into town. They spent a year. They analyzed everything, set everybody down, went back and forth. They came out with their policy options January of 2009, and through a series of a really kind of rough and ragged working with everybody else, this is now where we are in our prisoner population. The question is, can we sustain this? By closing prisons, we have not much option. But reentry has to work. Reoffending has to stop. Victimization has to go down. If you do this, you'll be successful. If you don't do this, we're back where we were 10 years ago. Reinvestment, here's what we were able to do. You'll notice that the prisoner reintegration right here, we actually spent $24 million in here and not a single person walked out the door. And we raised a stink, like, look, I know you're setting up an infrastructure. I know you're getting contracts in place, but that's a lot of money in a state that has a budget revenue situation that has no bottom. It just goes down and down and down. But because we had the reentry and because council state governments has come in, we are now spending just under $58 million current year, and we're looking at about the same for next year. And this is in the middle of schools being cut, higher education being cut, social programs being cut. We're doing reentry. We're able to get the funding because everyone's worked together. We've all agreed to be collaborative, and it's working. So what have we learned? We've learned that individuals have a lot of things going on in their lives. They interact with institutions. It might be schools. It might be providers. It might be the jail. Who knows? Then you've got policymakers. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to do reentry and you want it to work for the long haul in your state, find a sweet spot. Find where you get the most agreements, the most consensus, and work on it. You can work in these areas. Keep trying to expand this area. But you have to get everybody on the same page and working together. Some of our principals, read research, do what works. When they complained about Kwame going to boot camp, here we go, the Detroit News came out. Boot camp could cut Kilpatrick's sentence and they're complaining. So they called our office. I said, well, let's go to the NIJ website. And we looked at some of the research out there, and Auditor General had done some work. So they came out the next day and said, oh, hey, guess what? And they looked at the research. Find out what works, what doesn't. Understand the long-term history and perspective of the stakeholders you're working with. You have to use a collaborative approach. You have to step outside your own organization and your own safety zone. If you're a policymaker, please understand, you can't impose, you have to work with everybody. Involve your funding units. They are not going to fund it. They don't think it works. Involve your victims. We had a hearing several weeks ago on abolishing truth in sentencing. We had one homicide's, the wife of the homicide victim came in and testified, and when she got done, the committee went off another hour and a half, but we were done. It was the end of the package. Agree right up front. Use a comprehensive approach. Focus your resources, evidence-based practices. Be data-driven. You're going to have ugly incidents, and you're going to have the Detroit Free Press said, oh, look, he was a serial killer. He walked. He killed again. You have to stay focused. Look at the broad picture. Have a proactive media plan. Work with them. Tell them what you're doing. Be flexible so you can change whatever it is wherever you are in the state, and don't mitigate problems. Solve them if you can. Critical goals, set priorities, stick to priorities, settle priorities. Don't get off task. You have to keep on despite setbacks. You need to have local buy-in and trust. If your local probation officer culture is one that doesn't like the people they work with, you have a problem. You need to work with them. And I'm not saying that is the case. Have a comprehensive stakeholder approach. You need sufficient funding to not only start but to keep going. Inform the media. Take a balanced approach, funding and policy, local, state, punishment, rehabilitation. Real fast, dangers. You stop doing what works. You do what you want to do. You start overbalancing. We're spending too much on housing, not enough on employment issues. You implement too quickly. In Michigan, we went from no people being involved. The next year, we had thousands of people involved. As a consequence, they have changed the standards of who qualifies for this program. They just changed it last week. I talked with one of our statewide providers on Friday, complaining bitterly. They just found out they no longer qualify because the standards just changed. Gets everybody frustrated. Looking good versus doing good. Folks, you have to have results that make a real-life difference. You can't just have reports that say everything's fine, we're doing good, your money's being spent wisely. You have to have results to back it up. And you have to be sure that as you work with people, you get buy-in from everybody. No time for Dilbert. So my parting advice to you, give people hope and give them a plan. If you give people hope, They'll go running off in 10 different directions. Vendors will get a hold of them. Stakeholders will get a hold of them. The next thing you know, everybody's running a different direction, and it's not evidence-based practices necessarily, and everyone wants funding for what they're doing. If people have a plan and no hope, they'll go through the motions. They'll go around what you want to do, and it won't be particularly effective. Give people hope and give them a plan. You all come to Michigan. When you do, give me an email first. I'll hook you up with the appropriate group, people you can talk to there. Love to have you out there. It's a beautiful country. Thank you.